हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So then, we'll be reading from Bala Vidyabhushan's commentary, but we'll first read the Anucheda. Considering the matter more deeply, suppose these upadis were not products of illusion and thus were substantially real. They could not possibly subject Brahman to division, since Brahman never undergoes change. Brahman also cannot be subjected to reflection, since what is devoid of qualities, extends everywhere and has no parts, cannot have any relationship with upadis, be it distinguished into original object and reflection, or even be visible. A reflection of the sky can never be seen, but only a reflection of a certain quantity of light in a portion of the sky, a portion defined by some upadi, some imaginary feature. After all, the sky itself is invisible.
Right, so you can't reflect the sky because you can't see it.
Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana gives an extended commentary to this Anucheda. This Anucheda explains why the theory is illogical. The proposal concerning dividing Brahman, Paricheda, is first refuted in the first sentence. If Brahman exists as a real object without an unreal upadi of ignorance, such as mistaking a rope for a snake, it is impossible for Brahman, which is not the object of any action, Vishaya, to be an object of division. Because right? Means dividing means there has to be an activity. If you want anything, a result to come, there must be an activity. It says Brahman, and activity means you have to have qualities. So therefore, without qualities, how there'll be action? Without action, you can't get division. Agrihyo nahi grihyate. Brahman, which is imperceptible, cannot be perceived. The untouchable can never be taken hold of. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 3.9.26. It should also be understood that Ishwar and Jiva cannot be parts of severed Brahman, separated by real upadis, like a chisel which cuts stone, since Brahman cannot be cut and it is understood to be one continuous entity. This would mean that Ishwar and Jiva have a beginning, since bifurcation is a process of cutting one entity into two or three. If one argues that Brahman is undivided, but has separate places which are endowed with upadis, this proposition is untenable. Since the upadis move about, since Jiva and Ishwara are active by nature, it is not possible for the part of Brahman endowed with upadis to move about also. Brahman is supposed to be immovable. Right? So all the definitions, how Brahman is defined, it can't actually function within this philosophy. Because the Brahman is immovable, but the Jivas move around, Ishwara moves around. So you can't, you know, so they'll say, no, Brahman is not covered, but a portion is covered, but that portion moves, but Brahman is immovable. Right? And at every moment, there would be a difference in location of Brahman endowed with upadis. Okay. And at every moment, different parts of Brahman would be endowed and unendowed with upadis. Because right now it's here, but if the jiva moves to here, then this part that was covered by upadis is now not covered. And now the covered part's over here. Right? Does that make sense? If one argues that the whole of Brahman is covered by upadis, Brahman cannot be completely covered because it would not be called by the name uncovered Brahman. That's where they make the distinction between Brahman that's covered and uncovered. So you can't cover the whole thing. If one proposes that the upadis do not have their support in Brahman at all, then there would be no liberation for Jiva and Ishvara, since they would have no relationship with Brahman at any stage. Right? So if the illusion is not connected with Brahman, then that means that there's no question of liberation. Because the jivas, then, if the illusion doesn't have that connection to Brahman, how by removing it they would connect to Brahman? Does this make sense? No?
Yes.
Means, how you say? If one's proposed that upadis do not have the support in Brahman at all, because then where does that power of illusion come from? So then they wouldn't be, how do you say? Okay, that's the bifurcation. Means they would have to have a relationship with Brahman, and their relationship at this point is the illusion. Right? Does that make sense? If you have Brahman, it's covered by illusion. So their relationship with Brahman is through that illusion. So if the illusion doesn't have a connection to Brahman, then they don't have a connection to Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, then they have to stand as their own entities. Right? So it's, So this is bifurcation. That's the paricheda, right? Because that was the... That was that Brahman becomes covered by something. Right? Isn't that what we did? Paricheda means delimiting. A water pot shape, for example, sets off, delimits a part of the atmosphere. Okay. Then the theory of reflection of Brahman, Pratibimba, is then refuted. There can be no reflected image of Brahman as Ishvara and Jiva because an upadi cannot have a relationship with something without qualities. Because something which is all-pervading cannot have difference of object and its reflection, since it encompasses everything. Right? Does that make sense? Means to have something and its reflection, that means that the something is in a particular space, and the reflection is in a certain amount of space, right? So if you're going to get the reflection, like let's say you have a full-length mirror, so yourself and the reflection have to be able to take up space. But if Brahman is everywhere, there is no space for it to be reflected into, since Brahman would be the reflection, you know, because you can't reflect it. I mean, it would be in the same space. So you actually can't reflect it because it's unlimited.
It reflects on itself. They don't say that.
They say that it reflects on itself.
I haven't heard of that. Sounds like something
I would say. Yeah, have to come up with something, right? You know, so, well, that didn't work. Okay, it reflects on itself.
Right.
Yeah. Hey. What are you looking at?
Maybe we can send them a note.
Yeah. Like that. And there's good lines, right? You look at me. Okay. So the theory of reflection of Brahman, Pratibimba, is then refuted. There can be no reflecting image of Brahman as Ishvara and Jiva, because an upadi cannot have a relationship with something without qualities. Because something which is all-pervading cannot have a difference of object in its reflection, since it encompasses everything. And something without limbs is invisible. Right? If there's no qualities, there's nothing. It's invisible. How do you reflect invisible? Right? One can see a reflection of the sun which has qualities like form, which is limited and which has limbs. On an upadi like water with distance between them. This cannot be said of Brahman, which has no qualities, is unlimited, and has no limbs. Right? So there's no possibility of reflecting it. Just as we can see a reflection of the sky, which has similar qualities of being unlimited and without form and quality, so we can see reflection of Brahman. No, we can see the reflection of the portions of light, planets, constellations, limited by upadis, not the sky. Right? So you can see something, you know, you look in the water, if it has nothing, you can't really see it. Right? Otherwise, one could also claim to see air, time, and space. Right? Space, time is reflected in the mirror. Now that could make a good screenplay. Yeah.
I was just thinking about it. Even if there's nothing there, you can see like the blue reflection, but it's only blue because of the curvature of the atmosphere.
Yeah,
like
because the there's air. Refracting. You're seeing the air.
Yeah.
You can't see space.
Yeah.
See, that's the whole point, is that you're seeing an upadi.
Yeah.
So it has an upadi, therefore you can reflect it.
Yeah.
But if it has no upadis, it can't be reflected.
Yeah.
That's the point the acharya is making.
Yeah.
Right? He's like that. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Is that yes? You know what I'm saying? Because one can say, okay, there's no clouds, no sun, no moon, no stars. You just see this nice blue in the reflection. But the point is, the blue itself is an upadi. It's not actually the sky. It's a limb of the sky. Right, the sky is there, but because the air is moving in the sky, and by whatever reason he says the curvature of the earth is that, it becomes blue. Right? Does that make sense? So that's an upadi. That's a limb of the sky. So that you're seeing, but you're not actually seeing sky, because the Brahmavadi is to give the idea, just like you can see the sky in your reflection, you can see Brahman, but you're not actually seeing. Right? Because the point is if they're taking their thing of no upadis, Brahman can't have upadis, and then it will be reflected. The point is only upadis can be reflected. So that theory can't work. Just like dividing can't work. Right? It means you have to unlimited. How do you get something limited? And it's also all-pervading, so that space is still unlimited. Right? It's still the uncovered Brahman. Otherwise, if you say it's the covered Brahman, then that portion is not technically that Brahman. They'll say it's real. They try to get out of it. But they're switching back and forth between two different definitions. You know, when you run into a problem in this, they switch to that. When there's a problem there, they switch to this. And this way, it seems like it's working. Right? But the point is how would that be Brahman if it's not connected? You know, how would the upadis have? Because if the upadis aren't real, then there's nothing to deal with. It doesn't become divided in the first place. So you don't have Jiva and Ishwara. They'll say exactly, but the point is they're defining. Here's Jiva, here's Ishwara. You just wouldn't have the phenomenon in the first place. Right? But now if it's part of Brahman, then you can have a relationship, but then that means illusion is coming from Brahman.
Yes.
And Brahman is not supposed to have any other qualities. Does that make sense? So either one is that Brahman, in its unlimited position, can't be, by their definition, reflected, and can't because it has no upadis to reflect. And if it has no connection with illusion, then the problem is you don't have a relationship between this part of Brahman and that part of Brahman. Right, because you're saying this part of Brahman is covered by illusion. So that illusion, but where does that illusion come from? It can't come from Brahman. Right? And if we say, no, it does come from Brahman, then the problem is Brahman can't have any qualities. Right? So their whole philosophy is untenable. It can't work. Right? Okay. Another one. The reflection of Brahman is like a sound and its echo. That is also not appropriate since it introduces a different concept. Thus the theory of reflection is also insignificant. Because you're giving sound and its echo, now you're changing, you can't say it's a reflection theory. You'd have to say, this is a new theory. You can't prove reflection which goes by sight with another sense by sound. That's a different theory. You know what I'm saying? So it in itself would defeat its own theory. Like that?
You know, but then the point is it's sound and it's echo. But the point is sound has qualities. You know, and therefore the echo has qualities. You know. Like the Buddhists, they say, you know, the sound of one hand clapping or something. You know, stuff like that. That's how they keep themselves busy. That's one way. The other way is when you take your hand and you move it in a speedily fashion and it contacts the face of such a Buddhist. Right? That is also the sound of one hand clapping. Summary of text 38. As Srila Jiva has just shown, when Brahman's upadis are considered empirically real, there results contradiction on the level of sambandha. Here, Jiva Goswami exposes the complications resulting on the level of avideya. What is the process of liberation from this state of duality, given that the upadis are real? How does Brahman, in its divided state, become undivided again? Jiva Goswami refutes two Mayavadi solutions. One, that liberation is achieved through knowledge, and two, that liberation is achieved through the blessings of Brahman. Text 38. If there is actually bifurcation of Brahman, that cannot be given up merely by knowledge of Jiva being none other than Brahman. If you say that the cause of liberation of the Jiva is the power of Brahman itself, that is our view. In the first view, Mayavadis assert that the Jiva is freed from the bondage of his upadis by the cultivation of transcendental knowledge, by becoming educated through the Shrutis, after executing the preliminary duties for purification. Footnote 11. Shankaracharya recommends the sadhana chatushtaya, or fourfold practice. 1. Discrimination. 2. Dispassion. 3. Eagerness for liberation. And 4. The six achievements. Control of mind, control of senses, faith, stability of mind, renunciation, and tolerance. So even here, the desire is necessary, right? That's going to make it work. A serious follower of Shankara's sadhana is directed to enter the renounced order of life, sannyas, and to meditate on essential phrases, mahavakyas, of the Upanishads, such as Aham Brahmasmi and Tattvamasi. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan explains why this won't work. If the upadi is real, then it is impossible to believe that just by the knowledge of I am Brahman, one attains that identity. That is explained. This applies to Brahman being bifurcated by upadis, or being reflected. Just by one day saying, I am king, it is never seen that one becomes a king. Right? So just having knowledge doesn't mean, so something has to be done. Right? In the second consideration, Mayavadis posit that the Jiva's upadis are removed by the all-powerful benign Brahman. Regarding this, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan says, let the liberation of Ishwar and Jiva occur because of the power of some arrangement of Brahman. That is harmful to your position, since it admits Brahman has awareness beyond itself and ability to act. So their point is this, yes, go ahead, say that. We're happy with that one. That's what we say. But then what you're doing is saying Brahman has, then you're admitting that Brahman has awareness of beyond itself, right? Because they're just saying that Brahman is just conscious, right? But there's no upadi, so there's no, so if Brahman could be conscious of the jivas and ishwar that are controlled by upadis, that means it has awareness beyond itself. Yes. Right, and so then it can do something. If it's giving blessings, means there's action, right? And then it just turns into a whole thing. So that means why would they give blessings? You know, out of compassion, out of kindness, so all these qualities come up. So that's what we say. You know, so we don't have a problem if they bring that one up. Yes.
The philosophy that Brahman is like a blob, but with qualities.
A blob with qualities.
It's light blob with
a light blob
with compassion or like that.
A light blob.
Cloud. you know, nebulous.
Cloud, that's a little better.
Nebulous.
You're moving up.
Nebulous.
Like that, yeah. Blob, I'm not sure. I mean, I would go down as probably a, you know, how you say? You know, some kind of a... Yeah, horror movie or science or one of these, like, you know, like a song that kind of, like, targeted teenagers or something.
Like a nebulous kind of, you know, being. There's no one has that philosophy.
I don't know. Hollywood does stuff like that. I think that was Star Trek, right? That was Star Trek. Right?
Okay.
That's so 60s. Come on, get with it. Yeah, no. Not in these, because otherwise, what's a blob? Blob has limitations, so how would it be Brahman? You know, that's the point. It's consciousness has that element of all pervading and all that. But the thing is that Jiva's consciousness is limited. But the Lord's is unlimited. You know, otherwise, there's no difference.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Summary of 39. The preceding Anuchetas showed how accepting Brahman's upadis as empirically real failed to satisfactorily explain the existence of the Jivas and Ishwara. Now we consider the Shankarite second opinion, that Brahman's upadis are not only apparently real, pratibimbashika sata, are only apparently real, if, as they claim, upadis are neither absolute or empirical, but are intangible like a dream or hallucination, then their analogies are simply mental exercises. They are inapplicable and make no sense, right? Because we've taken those three levels of the absolute, of something that's, you know, upadis, but in the waking state and then in the dream state. Right? So you see how the acharyas take, they just take one thing at a time. You know, because otherwise, what generally speaking is when one discusses these things, they'll go all over the place. Right? It means you bring up one, then they'll switch to a different paradigm that in that it would answer that particular question, but it would have its own weaknesses. So then you point out the weaknesses there, they'll switch to a different one again. So then people are very happy with these kind of discussions. But when you keep them to one point, they become very uncomfortable. Right? So here it's like you finish one, then you move to the next one, finish that. In other words, they've made their points. Okay, now we deal with one point at a time and go through. And then as you go through, you see there's nothing left. And then it's complete. And you see they do it very, very succinctly. Like that. Okay. So text 39. If, however, the upadis are unreal products of illusion, avidyaka, their division or subjection to some other process is also an unreal illusion, because in fact no such process can occur in an unreal state. In such a case, using analogies that involve factually existing upadis, like that of the sky within the pot, cannot legitimately help the impersonalist establish the position, because the theory is based on the example of an unreal dream. It means it's not real, so you can't give something solid to get yourself out of it. You know what I'm saying? If you're in a dream, you can't, therefore, if you're dreaming, you can't, you know, use solid things from outside the dream to make the dream work. You know what I'm saying? That it does something. The dream is a dream. Does that make sense? Right? So people like to play with this one, you know. But the point is it's in a dream, so you can't. Like that, you know what I'm saying? If two guys are sitting there in the desert and they're seeing a mirage, you know, they can't use something within the mirage to get rid of the mirage. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And you can't use something outside of the mirage because you're only saying that it's there is only dream. Does that make sense? So his point is it's not going to work at all. Yeah. Okay. In such a case, using analogies that involve factual existing upadis, that means the next level of consciousness up, like that of the sky within a pot, cannot legitimately help the impersonalist establish the position, because the theory is based on the example of an unreal dream. It is impossible, after all, to establish a relationship between the existent and non-existent. Does that make sense? So in the dreams, non-existent, so you can't use something existent to establish the non-existence. Right? If you're saying it doesn't exist, if nothing's there, how can you use something that exists? You know, it's either the philosophy, nothing exists, you know, and if so, you can't use something real to give an example. Therefore, whatever they propose to be true is nothing but the play of illusion. Right? So it's just illusion is making a game here that you think that you can do something with it. But the point is that if it's a dream and it's illusion, then everything within it is also illusion. Such baseless ideas do nothing to prove the impersonalist hypothesis. Right? So taking that position is even worse too, you know. Because the other one you're saying, okay, if you take it as real, means you can actually perceive it, then it's not going to work. Because then the problem is Brahman doesn't have perceivable qualities. So you can't apply that. And if you say, well, it's just an illusion, then the illusion, it's all illusion anyway, so how will illusion get rid of illusion? Right? So there's no substance there. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan comments in his Tika. Bifurcation and reflection of Brahman by unreal upadis is now refuted. Avidyaka means false, like thinking a rope is a snake. Bifurcation and reflection caused by false upadis are also false since nothing actually occurs. Right? Means if it's false, it didn't happen in the first place. So there is no bifurcation, there is no reflection, because it's all in a, you know, in a dream anyway. It didn't happen. Right? You know what I'm saying? Like that.
So Maharaj,
yes.
It's not a valid source of knowledge. It is not.
No, because you're basing it on illusion. Because the other one you're basing on pratyaksha, that you can see it.
Yes.
But at the same time, they're trying to take it back to Shastra. So they will try to take it all back to Shastra. But the point being here is that it doesn't fall into the 10.
Yes.
Using illusion to define something is not one of the 10 items.
Yes.
Like that. So at least the one before, there was the element of pratyaksha. Mm-hmm. But the problem is then if you can perceive it, it can't be part of Brahman by their definition.
Yes.
Right? If they say, well, it's by the grace of Brahman, then that falls into our definition. Yes. So yes, we'll accept that. You know, and so let's discuss, how is it Brahman
yes.
is giving blessings? How is it Brahman is having compassion? Like that.
Yes.
So that we don't mind that part.
Yes.
Bifurcation and reflection caused by false upadis are also false because nothing actually occurs. By showing examples of real upadis where a pot divides up the sky and the water in a pot produces a reflection of the sky, one cannot prove a claim depending on falsity of Ishwar and Jiva like a dream, since they are supposed to be fixed as one consciousness alone. So it means you're just going outside of the thing, just like you said, sound and echo. It just goes outside of your proposition. Right, and there's only supposed to be one consciousness. So if you say falsity, illusion, that's a different consciousness.
Yes.
But if there's only Brahman as consciousness, you can't have illusion.
Yes.
Right? But then if you say there's a reality of illusion, I mean a reality of this consciousness, a change in the consciousness, then the problem comes in Brahman, there can be no change. Right? So you can't get, just by covering it with a pot, wouldn't create a difference. Right? The quality of the sky in the pot and the quality outside is still the same. Right? So now we're saying, no, the quality of the consciousness of the air in the pot or the sky in the pot has changed because it's in the pot. No, it's the same sky. Otherwise, why, when you remove the pot, it goes back in? Right? So that's the point. If there's no relationship, then... Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, it's just so. If you... Okay. Showing the example of pot and water in a pot is a real occurrence Whereas what is to be proved, vidya and avidya covering Brahman, is not a real occurrence. Right? Pots and that are real. Water's real. Reflections and bifurcation is real. But this covering of Brahman, because it's just an illusion, it's like a dream, it's not real, so you can't put the two together. It is impossible to combine the two on the basis of similarity, because they're not similar. Since there's no similarity at all. Right? Because if you say, well, in the dream, no, but there is, okay, in the dream state, then there is a real snake. Then the point is then you're admitting that it's not illusion. There is such a thing as a snake, therefore the rope seen as a snake. It's just an illusion that you think is a snake, but why would you think? Unless there's a similarity between rope and a snake. So that means there is a rope, there is a snake. So you can't just say illusion. So that's the problem. You can't use these things. You just have to prove it by it's just all illusion, it's just all a dream. But where did the dream come from? Dream of what? You know what I'm saying? So they're always going to try to take it back to the higher level of their consciousness. But then the problem is then in doing that, then they lose their basis of their philosophy. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like fighting for natural things using all modern amenities. You know what I'm saying? Like that. It means, you know, okay, you save a few trees, but, you know, what about the overall? Does that make sense? It just doesn't go together. Thus, the theory of bifurcation reflection of Brahman is a manifestation of ignorance only. According to what was said, it is impossible to establish. Tad tat vyavastha payitum. Creation of Ishwar and Jiva by bifurcation, tena, or reflection, tena, which did not even exist, a prop, tena. Right? So you can't establish it. If it doesn't exist, then it wouldn't be there to use as your philosophy. Right? You can't. If something doesn't exist, you can't say, well, we're going to use this non-existent thing to prove, you know, something real. Thus the categories shown by Vyasa are true, since the counter-proposals have been defeated. So, in other words, he's saying the Lord is eternal, Maya is eternal, the Jivas is eternal. Right? So, because their whole point is that he's not, it means it's all an illusion. Right? Like that. Summary of text 40. Having denied the validity of the two main monistic theories, Pratibhimbavad and Paricchedavad, now Jiva Goswami turns his attentions to the spurious Ekajivavad, or doctrine of one Jiva. Right. So now it's spurious, so that's even more bogus than this other bogus stuff. Right. He will also examine the inherent contradiction in Brahman's perfection and the superimposition of avidya. Text 40. Such being the complications of the relationship between Brahman and illusion, we should consider the following implications. Brahman is perfectly pure because it is unalloyed spirit and can in no way be affected by avidya. But avidya affects Brahman nonetheless, and this impurity creates the jiva. Right? This is their philosophy. Then the personality of Godhead comes into being as the foundation of the illusion of the jiva's own avidya,
foundation of the illusion of the jiva's own avidya produces.
Comes into being as the foundation of the illusion of the jiva's own avidya produces. Oh, so you're saying the jiva's own avidya produces the personality of Godhead.
Yeah, exactly.
Huh. So then, them becoming God would also be an illusion. Such a situation is full, because they refer to each other as Narayan. But that's Ishwara. So then, that's an illusion. So they produced, so it's an illusion. So they should actually just refer to each other as Brahman, Brahman.
But then they straighten here, then avidya affects Brahman, but then they say it's coming from Jiva, but Jiva isn't there.
Yes, that's the whole point. How do you?
Then where is the avidya coming from?
Yeah, that's the whole problem. So now, if it's real, then that means Brahman has to be transformed. If it's not real, then all this that they're talking about can't be happening, so it doesn't explain anything. Right? So all of their philosophies wouldn't work because it doesn't explain it, because it's not real. You know, so that's the problem, is there is Jivas, there is Ishwara, there is Brahman. Right? There is the material energy. So how to explain that? You know, so that's the point. If they say it comes from the Jiva, but the point is the Jiva can only be there if illusion is there first. But then it's produced by the illusion of the Jiva. So it's not tenable. So they look at it from one way and look at it from the other, but they never discuss them both in the same place. That's why they use these different examples and then try to... You know, because it means that examples sound nice. They've been using them for the last, you know, what, 12, you know, what, no more. 1600 years. Right, so the whole thing, you know, it works great. You know, it's kept great scholars in illusion for a long time. But because they're not thinking about it carefully, they want it to be true. Like that. That's the whole thing.
Like Santa?
Santa.
Like Santa.
Santa, yeah. Like that. Like that. We went to his place. He's actually got his city up north there.
Lapland?
Yeah, in Lapland. Like that. But it was summertime, so he was out on vacation. Yeah. We went to his place, we were going to go see him, but he wasn't there.
And where's his vacation?
I'm not sure.
Africa,
the Bahamas or someplace. Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, Mediterranean or on a cruise, you know.
Well, like technically, he only works one day a year, so.
But he works a lot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's preparation. You have to make everything before you go out.
That's what the elves are for.
The amazing thing is why they haven't set up all the toy companies there. You know, they should give them a tax break and then they'll all be there, right? Because that makes it easy for Santa.
Another illusion.
Yes, another illusion. Yes. So you're saying here that Brahman can't be affected by illusion, but somehow or another, nonetheless, in their philosophy, Brahman's affected. Right? So there's your first problem. Okay, and then the jiva is created again to be subject to that illusion's influence. Right? Then, okay, that's the point you were making here, is that then the personality of Godhead comes into being as the foundation of the illusion the jiva's own avidya produces. Right? So the jiva, by his illusion, produces the personality of Godhead. And then the jiva is again produced, you know, subject to that illusion, that illusional influence. Right? So the jiva is the source of the illusion. He produces this whole thing. Then he's again produced so he can be under the influence of that production.
Yeah. Hot class.
Yeah. That would be a real art house movie.
Marsh, don't we have a parallel to that in our philosophy? Is that there's like the broad at least ego, a false ego, and then the more specific, like just the desire to be controller and enjoyer? Is that
That's fair, but still you have the consistency of the jiva all through, from transcendental to the, you know, the primordial sin to the actual specifics of illusion. Mm-hmm. But the illusion is separate from the jiva. It's not produced by the jiva. Mm-hmm. It's just the jiva shows interest by his consciousness in looking at things from the perspective of illusion as opposed to reality. And the illusion means that he's not seeing its connection with the Lord. Mm-hmm. In other words, he's trying to perceive it that there's the Lord's energy and myself. Not the Lord, the Lord's energy, and myself. That's the difference. He just leaves the Lord out of the equation. So it's not that he produces the illusion, but it's just due to his consciousness and that particular variety of illusion reciprocates with him.
Right?
Now Krishna says, as you surrender, he reciprocates. So that means that it must be the same principle. It means it must be connected with the Supreme Brahman, because that illusion reciprocates with you on how you deal with it. Mm-hmm. Right?
Because that's not a statement of Maya, that's a statement of Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that means Krishna is the foundation of the material energy. Otherwise, why would it function in that way?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's still, you know, the Paramatma is controlling. But that original is, you're choosing, do you want to see it according to transcendental consciousness or material? And so whichever one you work in, then the energy, superior energy, takes care of that. I mean, superior means superior to us.
Mm-hmm.
Means greater. You know, so you know, how you say, the internal potency is 3/4 of unlimited, and the illusory is 1/4 of unlimited. And we're 1/10,000 the tip of the hair, no matter how you cut it, right? So we're going to end up on the same size. Is that important? Okay. Such a situation is full of contradictions. It involves these incoherent presumptions that within the pure spiritual identity of avidya enters, that God is an upadhi produced by that avidya, and that within God there is vidya, the opposite of avidya, and that although full of vidya, God is still illusory. Right. So it doesn't make sense, any of it. Each one is a contradiction of the other. And we haven't even discussed the point of where does avidya come from, right? Because that's just that because it's not being discussed as much, because the Mayavadis, what was their position? It's
anirvachaniya.
Yeah,
impossible to define.
So they can't deal with that. So they only deal with, you know, okay, once it's there, then you start playing with it.
Yeah.
But the point is they can't even define where it comes from.
Mm-hmm.
But we can define it. They can't. Yes.
So Maharaj, if we have those kind of discussion, if we keep it really to the basic, they can escape.
No, that's all. That's the point. Is that we see is the acharyas don't go beyond the basic, because you get off into the other fancy things, and they can that you might be able to prove one of their illusory elements with another illusory element, right? Because of the similarity. But when you go back to reality, then you can't prove anything. So the point to get them is right back at the root. You know, you don't get off into all their kind of other stuff, because that's what they're practiced at. That's what they're good at.
Because that sounds really...
Because they've been cultivating for thousands of years. So the point is, because you have to remember, as we may say, actually you'd have to say 2,500 years. Because Shankara's position is only a transformation of the Buddhistic.
Yes.
So the Buddhists have already been working on this for 2,500 years. Right? So you're looking at a lot of, you know, ways of putting it together so it sounds good.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You know, so you give that time, and they develop nicely. So you don't want to let them get to that, because it's just a matter, because they'll talk about their pots and their air and their birds and the trees and all these different things. But the point is no, you have to go back to the root of that. You know, it's just like the bird and the tree. But there is a bird, there is a tree, and you can still see the green bird and the green tree. It's not that the bird has become the tree or the tree's become a bird. You know, like that. Because the point is it's Brahman. There are no qualities, so you can't have that. It just sounds good. You know? So you want to go past the sound people. Yes.
But Maharaj, can we say that this argument can defeat Buddhism?
Yes, it would be the same. The only difference is that they're not going to use Vedic basis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be even have less of a foundation.
But and it's working.
But it's also is that, you know, whether you're going to find somebody, a hardcore Buddhist, I mean, it's like, where do you find such a person? Because if they're monks, that's one thing, but if they're not monks, then they're only using it for material life, material development. You know, and if they're monks, then most of them are just doing meditation. How many know philosophy? You know, so it's going to be the same with the Mayavadis, but the point does that make sense? Yes. But they won't have, I don't think they have as necessarily as developed as how exactly they You know, how they, because for them it's just there's a stream of consciousness. Well, where does this consciousness come from? Because if there's nothing, where did consciousness come from? And then on consciousness, where did illusion come from? So they have even more, I think, contradictions.
But at least this type of discussion can put some doubt in the Buddhist.
Yes, no. The point is discussing at this level, it will definitely, well, one won't be, they won't be able to make the philosophy stand. As I said, this is the point. Vedanta means functioning at this level, right at the root, because you're dealing with God, the living entity, and the material energy, and the reality of it. So that level, than any other aspect of any philosophy or theology, is going to, you'll find a weakness. When you get into some of the other things, then it starts to get distracting. That's why there's so much. You know what I'm saying? If you say, you know, describe the Christian theology, it's a huge thing. But as is defined, it should be able to be written in a few sentences. But it can't be written in a few sentences, because they don't know how to define divinity. You know, or how divinity and the mundane have a connection. These things can't be defined. These are the differences in the church. These are the differences between, you know, heresy and you know, you're okay. You know, people are burnt at the stake over these things. You know, it's so they can't give these clear definitions. But Vedanta can, so that's the advantage, is one should function at that level. That's what we were saying before. If you function at that level, it's beyond anyone's conception. And so, therefore, it will make sense to anybody who is actually sincere. But the point is very simply put, it means you could explain this to anybody. So you could show anybody how it's not working. Right? Does that make sense? Balade Vidyabhushan restates the position. Our conclusion is not bifurcation or reflection, since these are explanations made for the understanding of ignorant people. The conclusion is... Restates the position. Okay, so this means the restates the position of the new Mayavad philosophy.
Yes.
Okay, so our conclusion is not bifurcation or reflection, since these are explanations made for the understanding of ignorant people. These are the Mayavadis talking about other Mayavadis. The conclusion is one jiva only. That is described in the following. This Atma, bewildered by Maya, situated in the body, does everything. In waking state, it becomes satisfied by various enjoyments, like women, food, and drink. Kaivalya Upanishad 12, footnote 12. Baladeva Vidyabhushan is here paraphrasing the philosophy of Ekajivavad. This theory emerged in response to the great Madhvite Acharya Vyasatirtha's polemic work, Nyayamrita. In it, Vyasatirtha points out the gaping holes in Pratibimba and Paricchedavad. The Mayavadi scholar Madhusudana Saraswati tactically accepted these weaknesses by stating that actually the theories of division reflected are not essential to the doctrine, but simply offered as aids for the less intelligent. The truth, as he claims in his book Advaita Siddhi, is the solipsistic. Solipsistic?
It means that only I exist.
Only I exist.
Yeah, everything else is a product of figment of my imagination, even other people.
Okay. That here, in fact, only one jiva, who creates the world as his own illusion, including the illusion that other jivas exist. Because this Ekajivavad says that the glance, drishta, of the one and only jiva brings about the creation, srishti, of the world, it is also called drishti srishtivad. Okay, drishti srishtivad. Yes. It seems to be. At least these three are there. It means the two are the main ones based, I think, on Shankara's work. And then this one has come in because the weaknesses in it are pointed out, so then he's come up with this as an alternative. So this thing means, in other words, if the other two were stupid, this one's even more stupid. You know, so somehow or another.
There's another position too. They say that, well, actually, and none of this is very important at all, but the point is we're stuck here in the material world. The house is on fire. Therefore, we have to jump out the window. And so you have to follow us and do it.
Yeah, but then they haven't pointed out that they're on the 12th floor. Yeah, so that means that there is no philosophy. It's just, you know, so they're seeing the perception of there's a problem. But. Okay, so we were at... Shruti also says, ekam eva dvitiyam. There's only one entity without a second. Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.1. Thus there is one Atma, mere consciousness, and nothing else. It produces maya made of the gunas as an effect of disturbance by avidya. Right, so here again, avidya is not explained where it comes from. And then produces one entity identified as I, aham artha, and many entities identified as you, yusmad artha, perceived objects. The entity with identity of I is the Purusha with his own form. The entities identified as perceived by aham artha are mahat tattva and other elements down to the earth, which are all material and unconscious. Other Purushas of the same sort, and one special Purusha called the Supreme Lord. Thus there are three varieties of objects perceived. Right. So in other words, you're seeing, I mean, there's besides yourself, then you're seeing the environment or the field of action, you're seeing other living entities, and then there's the Supreme Lord. So these are all the things perceived by the one Atma. Right? Yes.
One Atma means everybody's sharing the same Atma. Or everybody has their own kind of...
Well, it appears, I mean, what's been said so far, correct if we're wrong, is it says, oh, there's only one person who's actually, and otherwise everybody who's not that one person, you're just part of their illusion created by creating the modes of nature and all these things. So you don't actually... Yeah, that's the question. Who is that one? Do they explain that? You know, or is that supposed to be, how you say, this Madhusudan Saraswati? He's the one... Do they address that, or...?
I mean, he died long ago.
So we're still left in his dream.
They thought he died. It's just an illusion. So he just got tired of interacting. Maya and avidya appear by themselves and create jiva and ishwar as shadows. Nrisimhatapani Upanishad. Okay. By association with gunas, the capacity as agent and enjoyer is placed in Atma. In a dream, someone imagines a palace, a king, and citizens, and thinks himself as the ruler. When knowledge appears, when one wakes up, nothing else exists. Only the one Atma, which is consciousness, remains. Right. So, in other words, why would it work? Because we'll sit here and ask, well, who's the one jiva? Right. But people who are attracted by the philosophy won't think that, because they'll naturally think, I am the one jiva.
Isn't it materialism?
It is materialism. It just means you're just being self-centered.
The karma is saying the same.
Yeah. So all it is just a throwing the trance. By this process, you'll get liberation instead of material pleasures. Mm-hmm. But their whole point is you'll get Brahmananda instead of, you know, the material happiness. You know, Bhavananda. Like that. So people will buy it because everybody wants to be the center, you know, and then they'll think that everybody else is, you know, so each one will think everybody else is, yeah. That's the... This Anucheta refutes this idea. According to what was previously said, with the refutation of bifurcation and reflection of Brahman, only Brahman and ignorance are left to be discussed. Brahman is completely free of ignorance, since it is not subject to anything. Agrihyo na
hi griyate. That which is imperceptible cannot be perceived. Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.9.26. Because the two, Brahman and ignorance, are contradictory, it is impossible to establish their interaction. Right? So how do you establish Brahman, which has nothing, and ignorance? So there can't be any. How do you define the interaction, since there's no common ground? Right? One has qualities, one doesn't have qualities. One is in ignorance, one is supposed to be knowledge. So where's the basis of interaction? When there is a sudden relation between avidya and pure Brahman, tatra shuddhayam, jiva arises from the relationship, becoming the shelter of maya produced by that jiva. Brahman becomes Ishwara, right? So then the jiva produces God, right? Brahman, overcome by the maya of Ishwara, becomes the individual jivas. Then it goes the other way. You know, so it just like it doesn't make any sense. You know, so it says when Brahman becomes overcome by avidya, then he produces, it becomes that jiva, so that one jiva, yeah. And then that Brahman becomes Ishwara, which is then an expansion of that. And Brahman overcome by the maya of Ishwara, again, further becomes the individual jivas, which means everybody else. Yeah. Right. But then that means then technically. Yeah. These are okay. These are technically, you would have to be that is only Brahman can be the jiva. Yes. Right? There can't actually be anything else. So the point is then that one, so then whatever's here, then it can't be us. We have to be part of that dream. So then that really goes into like Buddhism. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of reverts back farther. You know, because then what's the point of you even making an endeavor, because you're not anyway. So that supreme, then that has to make the endeavor, because we're just part of the dream. You know, so there's no meaning to sadhana or any endeavor. So this really, you know, how you said, in other words, the passion of their need to gain liberation, when it's shown that their whole process doesn't, then the next natural test is things to go into ignorance.
Sense gratification.
Yeah, like you generally see is that whenever you have some kind of a culture, when it's defeated, then the next stage is they go into ignorance. Mm-hmm. Like that.
Mm-hmm. So. It's like after the class, it's like right there, and then just like the pub.
Because there isn't anything left.
Yeah, there's nothing else.
But the pub doesn't exist.
Well, yeah.
Especially after you pass out.
Yeah, no, so the whole thing is that. These are simply, yeah. These are simply the incoherent ramblings of fools. Sensible people would never speak like this. Though appearing to be a learned conclusion, it is cheating. The quotation from Kaivalya Upanishad means that the jiva is none other than Brahman, because Brahman functions as jiva support, and because Brahman is all-pervading. This is the explanation of the wise. Saying the jiva and Ishwara are created by Maya in the Sringatapani Upanishad is merely expressing the ideas created by logicians who are bewildered by Maya. Because you have to see the context.
Yeah.
So, because Nisringadatta Upanishad is talking about when Nisringadeva came to Brahma in the beginning of creation, and then with the Nisringa mantra, then he created the universe with that. Like in this Brahma, then he saw Krishna, and then with the Gopa mantra, yeah, then he created the universe, right? But in a previous time, then that was done by Isa Nisringadeva, and with Nisringa Maha Mantra, he created everything. Mm-hmm. Like that. So that's what Nisringatapani is talking about. So they wouldn't be saying Maya and Avidya appear by themselves and create Jiva, and Ishwara is a shadow. So he's talking about how people would think. It's not, you can't use that as a basis, because it's being given as how people in illusion could think. So you can't use that as, see, here's the absolute. Yeah. No, the absolute is already defining, you know, yourself, you know, in illusion. So,
that's it. So, Maya, it is mainly world-ignoring.
That's why we always use the term word juggling. Because that's all they do. They try to move it around and, you know, change the context or take it out of context, or, you know, done it. You know, just like, you know, how you say it? In the Gita, you have the talking about the demoniac mentality. And one of them, Humbogi, you know, I am the supreme enjoyer. So then if we just lift that, you know, Mahavakya, you know, and say, see, Gita says, I am the supreme enjoyer. Yes. You know, so it's my right, I should be working for this. So that's all that they've done. They take a certain portion out and then try to make a whole thing out of it. But they're not, as being pointed out by Vyasa, they're not Mahavakyas. Om is the Mahavakya. Like that. But these others aren't Mahavakyas. They're just statements that are there in much greater, in a much bigger picture. You know. Yes.
But we could theoretically take all the points and show them how they fit into our philosophy.
Yes, that you could do. Because they're not Mahavakyas, they're just Vakyas. Right? And that they fit into the into that. Does that mean, yeah. Summary of text 41. Having completed his refutation of monism by logic, Srila Jiva Goswami now proceeds to disprove it by reference to Shabda Praman. He will submit the Mayavad doctrine to test of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The author of the Vedanta Sutras, Srila Vyasadeva himself, saw in his deep meditation the perpetual truths of Bhagavad Dharma. Nowhere did he find the idea of absolute oneness. Text 41. Furthermore, if the philosophy of oneness were in fact the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavatam would have stated that Vyas saw how illusion Brahman becomes many, and how by knowledge the misery of this manifold existence dissolves. Thus the personality of Godhead's pastimes and other personal features would have no substance in reality, and the conviction of Sri Sukadev's heart would have been invalid. Jiva Goswami elaborates on this verse in the Sarva Sambhadi. This is contrary to the heart of Sukadev. If the personality of Godhead's opulence were also a product of illusion, avidya, then Sri Shuka would not have become attracted to the Lord's pastimes, as the original text of the Bhagavatam indicates he was, and as Sri Bhagavat Siddhartha, text 183, will later elaborately discuss. Because right, it's already been established he was a transcendentalist, so a transcendentalist is not going to get attracted to something mundane. Right? So it has to be something higher. If the personality of Godhead's opulence were also a product of illusion. Oh no, we already said that one. Okay, I suppose. In furtherance of this, Baladeva Vidyabhushan adds, another failure in the proposition is discussed. If non-difference is the conclusion in Bhagavatam, Sutta would have said that Vyasa saw Brahman divided by ignorance and suffering destroyed by knowledge. But that is not stated. Vyasa saw the complete Purusha and the Jiva bewildered by Maya, which took shelter of the Lord. And he saw Bhakti of the Lord, which destroyed the Anartas. And so it was devotion which is destroyed. But it wasn't after destruction that the Jiva became the Lord. Right? The Lord remains, the Jiva remains, Bhakti remains, and the illusory energy remains. Next, Sri Jiva gives the meaning of the monistic statements found in the Vedas. Summary of text 42. Having completed his refutation of monism by logic. Can we just read that?
Very last
one. Okay. Mayavad is, however, quote profusely from Shruti. In this text, our acharyas explain how to resolve these seemingly monistic statements. Because right, they present them like that, so because they've taken it out of the context or like that, then it may appear to support their philosophy. Right? So now they'll show how it doesn't. Text 42. Therefore, the text of revealed scripture,
that speak of concepts like the division or reflection of Brahman should be understood as figurative expressions, gaunya vritti, describing some kind of similarity to literal division, reflection, and so on. The Vedanta Sutras make this argument, Purva Paksha, and conclusion Siddhanta, analytically in the following. Ambu vad agrahanat tuta tuna tata tvam. Brahman is not like water in being involved in division or reflection. Vedanta Sutras 3.2.19. Right, so it's Savasi. Brahman is not like water, so therefore you can't get a reflection. Because it has to, if all there is Brahman, it has to reflect on itself. Right. Because there's no relation with ignorance. Because it's the opposite. So how would they have a relate? How could they interact? Riddhi, Rasa, Bhaktatvam, Antar, Bhavad, Ubhaya, Samanjas Yad Evam. But Brahman does assume larger and smaller sizes. This much of the analogy applies fittingly for both Brahman and water. Vedanta Sutras 3.2.20. Okay. To establish the theory of division, Mayavadis often quote a passage from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 2.5.19. Yet tu indro mayabhi puru rupa iyate. Indra, Brahman, appears in many forms by his powers of illusion, Maya. Vaishnav scholars explain that the word Maya in this context refers not to the illusory potency, but to the unlimited expansion of the Lord into his creative internal energy, Sandini Sambit Ladini, which he uses to enjoy transcendental loving dealings in his spiritual, eternal spiritual abode. In the process, the Supreme suffers no division and no loss of his fullness, even while expanding unlimitedly. Such divisions are never separate from the source. To establish the theory of reflection, Mayavadis cite this text. Just as the Vivasvan, the sun, the very self of all light, strikes bodies of water and divides himself into many, the unborn Atma is made into many forms by upadis in various bodies. This is from?
There's no quote for
this. Oh, okay. The Mayavadis say this.
Yeah. I report. It's not good.
Having deliberated on the logical problems this concept introduces, Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan now explains in his commentary how the Vedanta Sutras is our guide in interpreting such analogical statements of the Vedas. What's the difference between analytical and analogical?
Analogical means by analogy.
By analogy.
Yeah.
Okay, the scriptures describing reflection and bifurcation are used to show similarity to reflection and bifurcation using Gauna Vritti. Devadatta is a lion. By Gonavrita, it means that Devadatta is similar to a lion, not that he is a lion. How can this be determined as the meaning? Vyasa has shown this in two sutras. The first sutra, the Purva Paksha, Vedanta Sutra 3.2.19, refers to both positions, bifurcation and reflection, because of their impossibility. Brahman is not like water in being involved in division or reflection. A piece of land is cut by water, and Brahman is not cut by upadis.
There is a footnote.
There is a footnote. 13. Very small footnote. Okay. For the sake of context, it helps to know that the previous sutra, 3.2.18, is Ataeva Chopama Surya Kadivat. Therefore, the analogy of the sun and its reflection shows the difference between the supersoul and the soul. Although this mentions a difference, it still raises the doubt. This analogy proves that the Paramatma reflects in avidya and appears to become the jiva. This faulty interpretation is addressed by Srila Vyasadeva in the next sutra, 3.2.19. Because what the analogy is for is showing how there's only one Paramatma, but just as the sun is reflected in water, it appears to us that there's many. So we think that each manifestation is a different person, different super soul, but it's actually the same person. Yeah. Understand?
like that. So, just as reflection actually is there, it's not an illusion, right? It actually it is there. So, the point is that, the Lord is in everyone's heart. But at the same time, it's only the same person. But because he's unlimited in his consciousness, therefore he can be conscious of all these different aspects, though still be the one person. That's how it's used. But then they try to take this same thing and apply it, that this is how you get to jivas. Right? Because their whole point is they want to be God. But it's actually a thing to show how God performs his pastimes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Brahman cannot accept upadis as land is cut by water. Shruti says, agriyo na hi griyate. Brahman is not subject to any upadi, so therefore there can't be any division or reflection. Read Aranyaka Upanishad 3.9.26. This is not true that Brahman is cut by upadis. Because right? That's what we're trying to say, is that it would be reflective, as we said before, you can't reflect something that can't be seen. You know, or cut, because it's unlimited. So, point is, that even you cut, it's still unlimited. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, how would it? How do you cut unlimited? The reflection of the sun is seen in water as a fragment, but the reflection of Brahman is not seen, since it is all pervading. Brahman does not have a reflection. Right. So the sun you can see because it has an upadi, but you can't see. Right. So that's been discussed. Footnote 14. In his commentary to Sutra 3.2.19 in Govinda Bhashya, Valare Vidyabhushana explains that since Brahman is all-pervading, no object can possibly be distant from him. Therefore, while the sun can cast a reflection in water because it is some distance from the water, Brahman can cast no reflection on anything because it is all-pervading. Therefore, the jiva cannot be a reflection of Brahman. It means, in other words, if you and the mirror are non-different, how do you get a reflection?
Yes.
The question that follows is, if Brahman does not literally reflect as the jiva, then what is the actual meaning of the corresponding Shruti statement? Vyasa gives the right conclusion, Siddhanta in the next sutra. What do the scriptural statements mean? The second sutra, 3.2.20, answers, the two statements do not employ mukhya vritti, literal meaning. The examples are used to illustrate only qualities of jiva and Brahman, vriddhi, harasa, bhaktatvam. Thus the Lord and jiva are a big piece of land and a small piece of land. Or the sun represents the Lord and the reflection indicates the dependent jiva. Why? Because taking the partial analogy fulfills the meaning of scriptures. Antar bhavat. Only by taking this meaning is there correct correlation of the object and the compared object, right? Because the other ones, it means if you're saying Brahman is reflected, it doesn't work. But if you're saying the Lord, then he expands as the living entities,
yes.
Right? Then you can say it works.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? The analogy actually has meaning. So the point is if you're trying to establish a philosophy, then there should be the element that your analogies work. Right, if the analogies don't work, you can't actually use them as a basis for the philosophy.
Yeah.
Yes?
I remember reading on the point that the jiva is superfluous from suffering. They say that when the moon reflects into the pot of water, you might find ripples on the surface of the water, but there's no ripples on the moon. And mm-hmm. So that's the analogy used for the living entity.
Yes, but yeah. That means... But that... But as long as they use that in Brahman,
yeah.
Then it'll have a problem. If they use it as the jiva and the body,
yeah.
then it works.
Yeah.
So that's what the books. Yeah. So that's what the acharyas are pointing out.
Yeah.
Is the analogy works when you bring it into Vaishnava Siddhanta.
Yeah.
All these analogies that the Mayavadis use don't work in their own philosophy,
yeah. Yeah.
But they work in Vaishnava philosophy. Right, because then they're in the proper context. Because then there's a similarity that you can actually connect.
Yes. And Maharaj, can we say that also? It's also because there is a clear intention for the Vaishnava. So.
Yeah. Yes. But it's just Means yes. Means it's by the clear intention the Lord gives the understanding by which you can and appreciate Him. While the Maya bodies don't have that, so they just are an illusion. In other words, Maya bewilders their intelligence. They're very intelligent people. Right? Means they can carry on these discussions in Sanskrit. You know, quoting from Vedic literatures that they have studied and probably have memorized. Right? But the difficulty is they don't have the grace of the Lord, so they don't actually understand it. While the devotee, because of his intention, he understands. Right? So that you could say. But just in the general, it's that the Vaishnava philosophy just explains the facts as they are. Right? So therefore the analogies work, everything works, while the Maya bodies are trying to explain them as they're not. Right? So then the analogies don't work. Right? It means those analogies do work, but not for how they're using them.
Yes.
Right? So that's why there's some potency in the analogy, because it's a Vedic analogy. But the problem is they're misapplying what they're trying to approve. Is that?
Yes.
Where were we? Were we in this footnote 14? Or we've gone back?
We didn't.
Question. In the next sutra.
Oh, the question, okay. You've already moved to 37.
Top of 37.
Yeah.
In the first sutra.
Oh, okay. In the first sutra, both proposals are refuted. In the second sutra, the truth is established by Gonavriti. The opinion of the author of the sutras is that Jiva is like an amsha, a reflection of Brahman, and the opinion of cheaters who are opposed to the Lord is that the Lord is also an amsha, a reflection of Brahman. Right? So, in other words, this element of reflection is the Jivas and Brahman. I mean, Jivas and the Lord. But they're trying to make it look like the Lord is also a reflection. Right, and not only that, he's a reflection created by the jivas.
Yes.
Right, and then having done that, then that's reflected again, and then you get the specific illusory, the living entities in illusion. So somehow or another, there's the state where the living entities, their avidya produces the vidya that therefore produces the Supreme Lord. And then that produces the jivas who are actually in illusion. So how that all, that's, yes.
It sounds like a very sophisticated way to avoid surrender to God and say it's not God.
So, but you see, it's very able to accommodate Vishnu. That's why they don't mind discussing or things like that. But that is, it's there, but there is no surrender. Yes. It's just very, just like Jaivati is a very elaborate system to avoid surrendering to the Lord.
Through karma.
Yeah, through karma, like that. Even the others are like that. Because Nyaya, you're not actually surrendering to the Lord. You're acknowledging His supremacy, but you're not going to surrender. But they don't even get involved so much with them, because their philosophy is not so developed. But yeah, through karma and jnana, it's just very nice ways to avoid surrendering. Yeah. Because you've got plenty of things to do. In the following Anucheda, the author explains the non-difference of the Supreme Lord and the Jiva from the Vaishnava point of view. Summary of text 43. This Anucheda serves to explain the principle of Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. Text 43.
Thus, scriptural statements that describe the oneness of the jiva and the supreme should be construed in a way that agrees with the philosophical conclusions derived from Srila Vyasadeva's meditational experience. Because if Bhagavatam is the natural commentary, so it must be in line with Vedanta Sutra. And so then its explanation of the trance then would have to be in support of what the Vedanta Sutra is saying. Right? We can avoid contradictions by considering both difference and sameness. Understanding that although God and all the jivas are one in the sense of being equally spiritual entities, the jivas are automatic particles of spirit.
Atomic.
Oh, are atomic particles of spirit. Automatic particles. It means they just run on their own. Right? Just add ignorance. Okay. Like small rays of the total spirit. This is the inherent nature of the jivas by virtue of the Supreme's own natural, inconceivable energy, which is fully competent to make any seemingly impossible arrangement. Later in this work, whenever we encounter such apparent contradictions, we reconcile them in this way. Balade Vidyabhushan's commentary.
Mars.
Yes.
And Prabhupada's pranam mantra, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi,
yes,
wouldn't be there unless these tendencies were popular.
Yes. No. It's just that's material life is these two.
Right.
You know, yes. So the Western, and then so especially he's addressing the Western world approach to that. You know, because they're making, you know, more and more popularity of their particular kind of Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, which means Prabhupada says it ends in sense gratification, so the Western whole view is just sense gratification. Because if there's no God, there's no God in control, then there's no need to follow any rules.
One can use these arguments to observe the transformations of the mind and things like that.
Yeah, no, it works everywhere. It's just how you apply it.
And on that note, I met some Mayavadis once who they didn't deny, you know, this supremacy of the personality of Krishna, but they wanted to merge into him and experience Rasa-lila. You know, they wanted to actually be Krishna. That was their entire goal, their ultimate goal of their practice.
Yeah.
Who was their practice?
Huh? Meditating on Rasa-lila.
So it's both.
Yeah.
They chant like Soham, like I am that.
Oh, these are those guys, the Vrindavan song. Yeah. It always used to be pointed out before us, you know, it's all grown.
Yeah.
When you go around the Parikram path, they wanted to build their ashram inside the Parikram path. I guess they had land or something like that. But whoever was the municipality wouldn't allow them. They had to build outside the Parikram path. Because none of the Brajbasis wanted to walk around them. So their point is, you're Mayavadi. Outside, you know, like that. Yeah. So you see, as you come over that little Radharani train thing, as you come up and then start around the corner, there are ashrams there. It's on the left. So it's outside. Yeah. Okay. I was only wondering why they were connected with Vrindavan. Okay. Subaladev Vidyabhushan's commentary. The Lord and the Jiva are conscious entities, just as two brahmanas, pale and dark, young and very young, are one in the sense that both are brahmanas. They are non-different in class, being conscious entities, but not in specific appearance. Right, so the same in class, but different in appearance. By the achintya shakti of the Lord, natural to him, which makes the impossible possible, there can be both difference and non-difference of Jiva and Brahman. Because of qualities like being a particle of a light and the sun, in this manner, contradiction is avoided.
Right.
So the point is it comes back again to the Lord. So what we've discussed up to now is logic, right? So logically, you can defeat all these philosophies, and we see as here, where Jiva Goswami, Baladev Vidyabhushan, Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, here are the greatest logicians, because Shankara doesn't actually propose a very complex
logical system, because there were no Vaishnava scholars really then, you know? I mean, so there's always, of course, the line is still going on, but it's not a predominance in mission, right? It means the Nimbarkas and the, I think the, what do you call it, the Vishnu Swami lines were there. You know, their missions, but they don't go out and preach much and stuff like that. So he could say these things, but his followers try to make a whole thing out of it. But you can defeat it by logic. But ultimately, then the point is made that logic alone is not enough, because if you have a better scholar, you can defeat it. Like Lord Chaitanya could defeat anybody in Navadvipa, and these were the best in India. You know, and then defeat whatever he said. You know, so you could just keep going like that all day if you wanted. But the point is, therefore it has to come to the point of just the Lord's, his own inherent ability and his nature. So Chintaveda Veda Tattva will answer all that. So the point is, since the logical systems are established, the other Vaishnava lines can function, because it is ultimately by the grace of the Lord you understand. But to reconcile all the different things, then a Chintaveda Veda Tattva will do that. Does that make sense? But in their own lines, then up to a certain point, it's not necessary, because the logic is so well established. Does that make sense? But in areas where even they have difficulty understanding, though they accept because of their faith and their surrender, is that could be answered by a Chintaveda Veda Tattva. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that the other sampradayas can find, you know, conclusions of their philosophy in a Chintaveda Veda Tattva. Right? So it's the natural philosophy. Right? Not here, because he's saying it's just the Achintya Shakti, natural to him. Right? Which makes the impossible possible. There can be both difference and non-difference of Jiva and Brahman, because of qualities like being a particle and light in the sun. In this manner, contradiction is avoided. The superior Shakti of the Lord, related to his Sarup, is like the warmth of the sun. The superior energy controls everything else. Because Prakriti, time, and karma cannot give up their natures, they cannot touch the Lord who is situated within them. Rather, out of fear of him, they maintain their particular natures. Right, so they just do whatever they do, even though the Lord's within them, but they still maintain just their what they're doing. They follow their laws. And Bhagavatam says, you know, the wind's blowing because of the fear of the Lord, or the sun rises because the demigods perform their duties.
Right?
Yes.
This sounds so familiar and so easy.
Because this now is discussing our philosophy.
Because we are accustomed to it, or because it is like that?
No, because it is like that. Plus, we're accustomed to it. No, previous is very difficult, because you're dealing with all these weirdo kind of head spaces. You know?
It sounds like just empty words.
It is empty words. But the problem is you have all these very intellectual people who have a... how do you say? They have great... they've applied a lot of thought to it, and they talk too much, right? So then these things go around. But that's why they're so difficult, is because they don't make sense, right? You know what I'm saying? So just using bigger words or bigger concepts, and it seems to be, but we see the acharyas deal with it very simply. You know, a few sentences, they just deal with it. Just their point is it's impossible. So it's you know, if you say it has no qualities, then you can't reflect it. You say it's unlimited, you can't bifurcate it. Finished. You know, no. You want to get into your fancy stuff, but the point is the basis on which you're going to work doesn't exist. That's all it is. So that's why those things are clear, but their discussions, and because what they're doing is they're taking the analogies and the points from the Shastra that are used in its natural state within the Vaishnava philosophy. And then they're twisting by word juggling. Right? So that's why it doesn't make sense. Okay, so we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Shila Prabhupada.
Prabhupadaki, Samavita Bhaktivarindaki, Jainita Gaurapadaki.